Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have you here with us this evening, this day, whatever the fuck time you're listening to it. We are the Experience Grind Podcast. Hey, you didn't do Chocolate Rain. That's
I really wanted to.
You did Zelda.
Yes.
Nice. So, hello everybody again. I'm going to just say it again because we're kind of in a weird place today.
Yes.
Ryan and I have both had days today.
Uh huh.
So I guess the recording of this episode itself is going to be an experience grind.
That's right.
You want to share what you've been doing today?
Oh yeah, and not to mention we're out one sound engineer tonight, so
yeah.
We're flying solo. Yeah.
Can two dudes do it solo?
I think two dudes can do anything solo.
That's right, especially those two dudes are us, brother.
That's right. So I guess my day today was spent playing a board game called Star Wars Imperial Assault.
Yeah, we're big into Star Wars lately,
yes.
Aren't we?
Oh my God, I can't not be into Star Wars.
We're in that hype train. We're going full force, man.
I am.
I don't even care. Like I'm hype trained out like when I was when the original prequels were coming out.
I know, and that's why I'm trying to keep myself.
You try to keep it in check. I know, man. I know.
I'm gonna go in so hyped, and I don't think I'm gonna be let down again.
I don't think so either.
I just don't think I'm going to be.
I like JJ. I have faith in JJ.
I think the worst that's gonna happen is we're gonna have a good movie. It's not gonna be bad. There's no way it can be bad.
May the Abrams be with you.
And he usually is.
So you've been playing this board game.
Yes.
Imperial Assault, you said?
Imperial Assault.
Give me the rundown of this.
It is a kind of like a tabletop giant skirmish in the Star Wars universe. So it's essentially like Risk. But
okay.
It also has role-playing elements because you have a character that you can level up throughout the game. And the game place takes over several missions. And it has a board that can be rearranged to create different battlefields.
Okay, so that's what I was about to ask.
Is it like
a Hoth battlefield, or are there planets that you try to capture, like in Risk?
Yes, both.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, you don't capture any planets. It's more essentially like this. It's a very loose storyline, like Imperial forces are on Hoth. You have to rescue this rebel. And if you do, you get a certain amount of experience. If you don't, the Imperial forces get experience. So they level up against you, and then the rest of the game gets harder for you. Or you level up, and then your character becomes better equipped.
Is it like D&D? Like, is there... like okay, so the Imperial... You're saying you're against the Imperial forces, so you're playing as a rebel.
Yes.
Is there somebody playing Imperial forces?
There is a dungeon master. It is like D&D in that aspect,
so is it just one person?
There is one person who controls all the Imperial armies.
Oh, okay. That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, and so he gets to bring in what he needs for that specific mission, so he'll have like a certain amount of army points. And so, like, you get, like, an AT-ST and then a few troops, or, like, a bunch of stormtroopers and then some generals and
droids. He can Zerg rush the stormtroopers or go with big.
And today, a Nexu cat came up, and that stupid fucking smiley face.
Is that thing?
That thing from episode 2.
It's a Nexu cat. We have the name.
I think it's a Nexu cat. Yeah.
Wow. So, did you kill it?
Absolutely.
Fuck yeah,
Slice
man.
It in its stupid mouth. I hate those things.
Intense hatred to attack that fucking thing.
Absolutely. But it's been a lot of fun, and I think it's really a neat idea that a board game's not just like, oh, one and done. You play 2 hours and it's done, but it's a continually evolving thing. So this is probably going to take us probably half a year to just finish
pretty bad
one game.
But you're not playing every day.
No, we are playing once a month.
Okay.
For 6 to 7 hours.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so it's still
I've never
pretty
been,
long game.
Like, I like board games. I've never had a group of people to get dedicated enough with them. I mean, that could maybe be something we do in the future. I've always wanted to do big campaigns with people and sit around and drink.
Yeah, which... I was the same way until I found this group because I was like, oh, man, that game looks so cool. I would never play it.
Yeah.
Oh, Warhammer, that thing looks cool. I'd fucking love to do that. Nobody would play it with me, though. So
Warhammer, from what I hear, it's a big get into.
It's super expensive, and then you have to do all the painting and miniature work, and I'm so lazy.
I'm not lazy. I have so many other fucking things I'm doing.
I couldn't justify
it. There's no way I could get into it as bad as I would need to, but I do love the Warhammer, like, universe.
I do, too.
But I like the future one better. Warhammer 40K.
Man, some of my favorite PC games are the Dawn of War games.
Yeah.
I think those are fantastic.
I've got this awesome third-person shooter where you're one of the...
Is it Space Marine?
Yeah, it's just Space Marine.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's fucking brutal, man.
Mm-hmm. That game's not easy.
It's cool. I mean, I'm just like, I like, I'm a big fan of universe and world buildings, and man, that is a series deep in the lore of its own universe, and like, I've never played an actual physical game of Warhammer. I've played like
the video game
versions, but I just like to get deep down into that lore. I love to wiki cruise, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, and just read about all. Dude, there's so much weird shit in that universe, man.
I believe it. I too have not played any of the tabletop stuff. It looks interesting, but just can't dive in. But,
it's a task, man.
What have you been doing that you are down on the rag like I am? No, I don't think on the rag. That means something else entirely.
That is, man, that's funny that you say that, because that's something I think we should get into our unique area dialects at some point, because you're not from here.
I am not from here.
You're from North Carolina?
Yes, you got it.
Okay, I remember that. I had a 50-50 shot of a Carolina to get it right.
Yeah.
But one of the things that blew me away when I first met you, this is a totally divergent tangent. We're famous for those on this podcast. If you have listened to even two episodes, you know this. I loved that you had never heard the phrase THO. This was a completely alien
thing outside of Indiana,
which I didn't know. I just kind of assumed that was one of those, you know, there's when you're in junior high and high school, even before the internet, there are still some things that are universal that just kind of travel. I can't think of any examples right now, but I just kind of always assumed THO was one of those. But you're telling me that it's
featured
to this area of Indiana. And I've asked some other people, and a lot of them from outside of here also are not familiar with it.
I think it's like a local thing that just spread around. But for the uninformed, what is THO?
THO stands for titty hard on. Also, when generally a woman, but dudes can get it too.
Oh, yeah.
But when your nipples become erect. But for some reason in my area of the world, now our area, because you're here too, buddy. This southern Indiana place, it's called THO.
Which is something I had never heard of.
Yeah, and that's hilarious to me. So other than that, what I've been doing, I guess, you know, I play in a couple bands, and I had a show last night, 4 hours away, one way, and I didn't know it until we were there, which is the way all these things go when you're in never very well put together things, where it's just two dudes that are like, come on over, we'll let you play. So we get there, and then we find out that we're also headlining, which means we're playing last. So we played, I believe at 1 o'clock their time, but because there was a time change where it was really 2 o'clock back here, I think that's the way it worked. Anyways, so that was a 4 hour trip one way, hanging out, and then had to turn around and I drove home after the show, and I got back in at about 6:30 this morning, slept for like 4 hours. Got up, ate some terrible food for lunch, which was not good. And then I played Fallout 4, which I have been doing since I picked it up.
So, I'm very interested in Fallout 4, because I skipped it. I decided not to buy it and wait.
Yeah.
Because it's a giant, big open world game.
It is.
And Bethesda games, I think, usually you're okay if you wait a little bit, because they patch some things out.
And that is the world that we live in today anyways.
Yeah.
You're never going to get a complete game anymore. That's just, unless it's from Nintendo. True.
That is very true. That is very true.
They are about the only ones that still fully quality test. But yeah, I picked it up. I'm not even the biggest Fallout fan. Like, I enjoyed the series. I remember playing 1 and 2 when I was younger. I got pirated copies from a friend.
Yar.
And I liked them. I didn't really know what the fuck I was doing. I had no idea.
I heard they were pretty unforgiving.
They're unforgiving, and they don't hold your hand. It's just like, hey, here's this open wasteland world. Do whatever you want. I remember I liked them, but I was never like huge into them. I really liked Fallout 3 a lot. I didn't like the color scheme.
No.
Which is awful. And that's one of the nice things about Fallout 4. That's a nice change. It's a lot more colorful as a world. It doesn't have that gray, brown filter thrown over it.
It's what people are calling like the next gen color scheme is very, that's Fallout 3 in a nutshell.
Everything
just
was that
bleak and
not just
disgusting.
Fallout 3, you know, Gears of War had that garbage all over it too.
I don't know, Gears of War is definitely, but man, even Gears of War like had like some enemies that had neon colored yellow blood
and
stuff.
And they popped out.
It was just so brown and dark.
It was an ugly game.
Yeah.
And it was kind of fun. One of the things I like that Fallout 4 does that Fallout 3 did differently that I didn't like in Fallout 3 is that weapon degradation is not a thing in 4 anymore. You don't have to constantly other versions of weapon. And I hate that shit.
Yeah.
Bad enough you're making me deal with an overincumbence. I can only carry so many items in a world where you can pick up literally everything. That gets annoying when you're deep into fucking... You're on, like, the second level of a 7-level dungeon crawl. And you're already at max item. It's like, come on. It gets so annoying.
Yep.
And that is one of my eternal complaints. I guess to turn the opening of Fallout on its head, you know, when you start a Fallout, the famous speech, and that was something else I didn't like. It's always delivered by Ron Perlman. I don't know if you know this. And every other Fallout until Fallout 4, that opening speech of war never changes.
No, I didn't know that.
That's been Ron Perlman in every one of them.
Huh.
Until this one.
Do they have somebody else famous replacing him?
No, it's because Fallout 4 is the first one where your main character is fully voiced. And it seems weird, but it works pretty well, I feel. But the main character, is voicing that because he's talking and setting up the scene. So, I mean, I miss Ron Perlman, but it works in this regard.
It makes
sense
in the narrative.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's a little jarring at first. I think some people were more pissed off about it than I was. Because, again, I'm not a big Fallout guy. But I am having a lot of fun with the game. I will say that.
That's good. It's one I'm looking forward to getting around to. But I was like, I could get Fallout 4 and spend the next 3 months of my life doing it. Or I could play Tomb Raider and Star Wars Battlefront and just have these very small experiences. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
It's less daunting. Fallout 4 is very daunting.
I think
it's going to be good. But
a big reason I got Fallout 4 is because a couple of guys I work with had also picked it up. And now, you know, it's like junior high again, sitting around like, oh, did you find this? Oh, did you check this out? Whoa, I found this last night. It's cool in that regards. I didn't mind to get it because of that. It's something we can all talk about.
You made the right choice because I picked up Rise of the Tomb Raider and not a single fucking person has picked up that game. It is literally just me and all my other friends are doing Fallout. And it's like, I'm the fucking kid who likes strawberry and like this vanilla chocolate love fest. Like,
have you played
strawberry.
Any of it?
I'm about 5 hours in. I'm loving it. I think it's really good. I think it's solid. I think it's as good as the Uncharted games.
I'm bummed that it's Xbox exclusive, but not
for
super
now.
Bummed. Because,
for now.
Well, I know it will be at least definitely coming to PC.
I think it's they're very heavily relying on the holiday exclusive. I'd be very surprised if it didn't come to the PS4 by the end of next year. I'd be very surprised. You'll get the Game of the Year edition with all the DLC and everything.
Already.
I'm sure. I put my money on it.
I liked it. I just found this out. This again, we're diverging into a tangent. So
that's fine.
You know, Destiny, when Destiny released, it was a multi-platform release, but it was very heavily favored towards the PlayStation side.
Yeah, they had the PS4 exclusive console, and
they had the console. They
every
got
ad ended with the PS4 logo, even though it was on Xbox One.
They had weapons that were only available to PS4 players for like the first year, and I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty shitty.
You guys had exclusive raids too, which I think might still be exclusive,
I don't think
right?
Raids, we had exclusive strikes.
Strikes, that's what it is. You're right.
Everybody could do all the raids, but we had and that really also ended up hurting the game, I feel, because of the fact that not everybody had them. They couldn't be put into the weekly strike rotation.
Oh.
So it kind of really reduced what they could do with the game, because if half of this console players can't do it, they can't put it in. So that really kind of sucked. In retrospect.
That's the issue with DLC. It can split a community and just really destroy your multiplayer game.
But hey, that's Activision. But anyways, the cool thing I found out, I guess, so Microsoft was not allowed to even market Destiny.
Huh.
They couldn't promote or advertise for it. So in order to get around this, though, I guess they made clones that were Destiny themed and marketed those, right? That's so weird.
I did not heard about this.
I didn't know this either till like 2 days ago.
What?
Yeah, but there was like a Warlock fragrance, a Titan fragrance. And that's just so, where is that coming from? But that's what they did to be able to market Destiny somehow. They made exclusive colognes.
Oh, man.
Because I guess they couldn't like do anything digitally or show grass. So that's what they did.
Why wouldn't they do like toys or something.
I guess they couldn't show the figures. The characters, what they look like. So it's just colognes, but they use that to talk about Destiny. It's such a weird workaround. I'd never ever heard of that, and I don't think a lot of people have heard of it.
What a dumb marketing move.
Yeah, it's weird.
I actually give the Xbox One a lot of credit because they made a lot of headway since that E3 when they announced it, and they just got brutalized by the PS4.
Dude, and it's so weird how quick things changed.
Yeah, because Xbox 360 was on top last generation.
It was just kicking ass and taking names.
Yeah.
And then, dude, they just came out of the gate and kept falling.
I think Xbox One had too much focus on the multimedia stuff and not the games.
Well, they had a lot of other marketing missteps too.
Yeah, the Kinect. I think the Kinect's like the big nail.
Well, the Kinect. I don't care, but I remember I thought it was really shitty. I forget who was the lead of Xbox development at the time, but he's a smarmy looking fuck that eventually quit and went to Zynga.
I know who you're talking about. I know Phil Spencer's the new guy right now.
Yeah, it was the guy before him.
Oh, I can't think of the name, but.
Anyways, what I remember just about him. People were asking, because at the time they were pushing you have to be connected all the time. And I know one of the big things that
came up... No used games was their big thing, too.
No used games, and you have to be always online. And I know a lot of people, and a big chunk of people who played on Xbox, mm-hmm. were soldiers stationed overseas, like out in the middle of the fucking desert, who didn't have anything to do.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they couldn't get this new system. And I remember somebody asking this dude that, and he said... Well, for those people, we do have a product available. It's the Xbox 360. And it was just like, are you fucking kidding me, man?
Oh.
That's what... Wow. And I don't think it was long after that guy lost his job.
Yeah, fuck your goodwill. Like, this is just... That's a
smarmy dick.
Dick fucking, remark, yeah.
Like, come on. Ugh. And not only... You're not even going to promote your brand new system. You're going to bring up your old one that is dead at this point. Like, we're moving beyond the 360. Just a terrible move.
Hubris.
Yeah, that's the perfect explanation for it.
Yeah, he had his comings and...
So this is weird. We have spent the first half of this episode rambling about video games.
We have.
And this is a movie-based podcast episode. This is our Matrix episode.
Surprise!
Matrix / Animatrix. If you guys didn't pick up on that, you would have no idea. Mm-hmm. Unless you are smart and read the name of the episode.
Which I think... Which most will people
be,
should do.
Yeah, it'll be called The Matrix Animatrix. Yes. But you will have been confused up to this point, being like, what the fuck episode is this?
Yeah. You don't care what we talk about. You just want to hear us talk.
Yeah, and you just like the sound of these voices,
yeah.
I tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, our real quick before we get into our discussion, let's slow down a second. Thank our sponsor, Andre, the King of Champagnes.
You know, in The Matrix, everything tastes like chicken, except... For Andre California Champagne.
That's right.
It tastes like heaven. It tastes like the woman in the red dress. Wow, that just got really sexual.
It did.
And I didn't even mean to go there. I was just trying to bring in... It does. Ah.
I mean, I heard Andre will free your mind and unlock your potential.
Drinking Andre is like taking the red pill.
I drink Andre and I see code. Wow, just ones and zeros.
We have not practiced this. We are just dropping these off the top of the head.
Mr. Andre.
You think that's champagne you're drinking now?
There we go.
Mr. Andre. That's that was it. Very good.
I was stretching.
Let's talk about the fucking Matrix and the Animatrix.
If you don't mind, I think we should talk about the Animatrix first.
Okay.
Because
I was going to pitch this to you, and then I like that, and then we'll end with the Animatrix or the Matrix.
Game. Yes. Yeah. I think we'll have. Maybe more to say about The Matrix?
I would imagine. But I was actually really surprised when I rewatched the Animatrixes at how short each episode is. And I guess it makes sense given the budget and how daunting it is to make an animated movie.
There were a lot more than I remember, too. Like, there were nine. There were like three that popped up that I completely forgot about.
Yeah, well, that's cool. So. I think it actually works in its favor because it leaves you with a whole less is more feeling, and it's what am I looking for to say here? It leaves you wanting more.
Yeah.
I like it.
You would say is a good thing, and we'll get into this, and I will say for some of them, it's a bad thing.
Which part?
For the Animatrix. Some of them wanting to leave you more, I think, is a bad thing because they didn't do enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll talk about this more, okay, but so I think this will be the contentious part.
Maybe, yeah.
I think you and I
probably will agree.
We'll agree wholeheartedly on The Matrix. I'm sure we're not going to have any debate. Animatrix, there might be a little bit of debate.
Okay, well, let's get into it. So I think you wrote them down. I brought the booklet, and I totally forgot. So help me out with names. So, I know we're going to – let's start with the first one, which should be Final Flight of the Osiris.
Really? That was the first one for you?
Yeah.
When I was watching, I watched it through Netflix because
– Oh, I didn't know it was on Netflix.
It is. It's the only one on Netflix in America. They don't have any of the other Matrix movies, but they have the Animatrix.
I watched it on my because I own the giant Matrix box set.
I did too. I just didn't want to put it in because I was like, Netflix is streaming high def, and I have the DVD, so I'm going to do the Netflix.
I put them in – I have the DVDs too, but the – The nice thing is the PS3 and PS4s, they have really good upscalers.
Yeah, I'll have to put in my PS4 now.
Yeah, they have the best upscalers, I think, available, which is a nice bonus of having those systems. So
all right.
Well, let's start with what was the first one?
So the first one, when I watched it, was The Second Renaissance, Part 1 and 2. They just played it right together.
I think it flows better starting with The Second Renaissance, Part 1 and 2, because this is the prequels. This is setting up why The Matrix is existing now.
Yeah, and narratively, it's the first.
Yeah.
It's the first one chronologically. It makes sense to start with it. And actually, Final Flight was the very last one on Netflix. And
wow.
I remember it being a different order, too.
Yeah.
So I was kind of confused.
And mine, it goes Final Flight and then...
Yeah.
So I probably
they
what
put
has
that,
happened...
the money one first, big budget short at the front.
Okay, so we'll go with your list.
Okay.
We can start with these.
I'm cool, whatever. But Second Renaissance, and I gave little ratings to each one out of 5, 2, so I can give you my ratings and everything. But the Second Renaissance Part 1 and Part 2, I think, are the strongest episodes in the Animatrix.
Okay. It's funny... I will just say this because my original question for you, I just remembered it, is what was your favorite episode of the Animatrix and why was it Detective Story? Because that's my favorite.
My God, that's hilarious. And I know it's because of the noir.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big
and
part.
I'll tell you, it's my least favorite episode.
Really? I did not expect that. Wow.
Completely forgot about it and I watched it again. I think it's pointless.
It is pointless. I just stylistically, I love that one.
It's cool.
I love the way that his fucking computer looks in that. How it's this weird mishmash typewriter, steampunk sort of thing. Hey man, personal opinion. So we'll come back to it.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
So what do you rate? What do you rate?
So
them?
The Second Renaissance Part 1, I think, is the best.
That
is 5 out of 5. I love that
one. This is where we're going to diverge, because I think the second one's better,
I think that's where it loses me logic-wise.
Okay.
Once you start getting into, the warfare between man and machine, it escalates quickly, and, the things they do make no sense to me. It's you're going to block out the sun to kill these solar-powered robots, but, you dumb motherfuckers, you need the sun. You need the sun, too.
To grow food.
And yeah, I think, the whole fight between man and machine is caused because the machines go off and create IO or 1-0 or something is the name of the civilization.
0-1.
0-1. I knew it was fucking code, binary code.
Yeah.
And they want to be part of the UN. The UN denies them access. That causes the war.
Well, but
they don't kill the machines. I mean, there's some feudal stuff and there's some really graphic imagery.
That's what I like in the second one, especially.
Well, I think it's better in the first one. I know what you're talking about, but I think the most startling thing from the Second Renaissance is the girl robot getting kind of
that is brutal
assaulted and ripped up and she's screaming I'm alive, I just want to live. As
that's really brutal.
That's like
when
the
they
most
first
haunting
start,
thing.
Yeah, that
yeah.
part I agree with you there. Two things that I didn't really notice until I was rewatching it this time. There's a lot of modern allegories in this.
Yeah.
Number one, the robots are created and now they are our working class as humanity. So they're doing everything for us. One of the first symbols I noticed, they have these robots building giant pyramids.
Yeah.
Which is,
slaves.
Slave labor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Jewish slaves in the Bible. And then another thing is, I don't think it takes part until Second Renaissance Part 2.
Is it that rotting apple?
No, that is a cool thing too. But there's a scene where the robots are raising a flag similar to Iwo Jima.
And it's on fire.
Yeah. And that's just another really cool symbol that's taking something that's real and modern. And I really like that. That was really well done.
Yeah.
And I think most of these were written by Larry and Andy Wachowski.
Yes, I think so too.
And I think that helps a lot. It is, I understand what you're saying here, and that's the only problem when you're going back and trying to fill in story.
Yeah.
Is things can get a bit silly, like with the burning of the sky.
Which I think it's only because of what was said in The Matrix.
Exactly. And
because there's like a quick throwaway line by Morpheus.
Cool. Yeah, it's cool in The Matrix because it's ambiguous. We don't know what happened here. We do know that we did this to stop. But it's not shown or explained, really. It's just sort of this mythical thing that happens. And so when they go back and they explain and show what happening here, it's...
Which is the issue with any prequel or story that tells you how something happened.
It does lose some of that... Yeah. Mystery.
That's why I still think it's great.
Yeah.
Like, these are the best part. Like, the second one is just slightly... It's my second favorite of all the Animatrixes, but it's still...
I like
it's
that.
It's just not the
I
more
I also like... They talk about... There's the robot riding the mechanical horse, and he's blasting the trumpet of... I guess it's almost like the robot Armageddon. That part's really cool. That's the good thing about the Animatrix, and what I think lends itself so well to it. Like, The Matrix itself as a movie, to diverge, is like a living anime. You can tell in the movie that there is a Larry and Andy really love anime,
and it comes across in every single one of their movies.
Yeah. and that's why I think the Animatrix lends itself perfectly. It works so well because the movie itself is sort of an anime. I like that they did this. I cannot it's just so cool. It's a nice little, I don't know what to say. It's really well done.
Yeah, I think it's the best anthology / compendium to a movie. Because I know, like, Halo did it. There was, like, a Halo Legends that had, like, anime-themed stuff. And several movies try to do these tie-in stuff.
I used to be very into Halo, as we've discussed.
Yeah.
I have the Halo graphic novel that was a big release for Halo 2. Yeah. So, but anyway, so I guess I like in part two of Second Renaissance, when we're really getting into the war aspect... I think my favorite part of this, and it's another brutal scene, is when that dude gets pulled out of the robot mech suit and it pulls his arms and legs off. And he's like, oh God! Like, that part is haunting to me, and it fucking scared me, like, the first time I saw it. I was like, God damn, dude, that is brutal.
I can't remember if it's this one or another one, but I think there's also a scene where, like, a guy gets his head grabbed by a robot and it gets, like, squished and then pulled apart.
That's in the beginning of Second Renaissance Part 1. And that's actually why this whole thing starts, because it was
robot
butler. And he
tired
of being told what to do, and he snaps. I like about that, too, that lady, it was a lady that he smashes her head and pulls her face apart. And she's got, like, 9 cats, and you see, the closed circuit monitoring of it in her of him flipping out, and like you see him like kill like 9 of the cats, and then it's fucking cool. Man,
there's that, and then they go into like essentially like this is how the Matrix started, and you see like the slow steps that the robots are taking, and like these people who are being controlled by their emotions, like just naked slaves, like, and they're touching like bits of their brain to simulate like the laughing
and then he's
simulate
crying.
The crying, and I was like, that's not like super violent, but it's a haunting, kind of disturbing
it's
image.
It's the robots trying to figure us out as humans. That's really cool. And see what will work once they plug us into the Matrix. It's fucking cool, man.
It's for the money. I think this one has like the best visual imagery and just things like you won't forget. Like
I would argue,
man in half.
Yeah.
Like as like in like the battery tube. Just completely in half, yet still alive, like split right down the middle. There's just so many cool things in this one.
I think visually the best looking one is what is the last one on my DVD where they
matriculated?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where it gets super trippy, where they are trying to reprogram that fighting robot.
Yeah.
Dude, oh my God, the visuals in that are
ridiculous.
Like visually, that is the most stunning to me.
So. All right, I think we've said our piece on Second Renaissance,
part
1 and 2. I'd give them both 5 out of 5.
Okay.
Like,
I love them.
I think
like them
a
lot.
Perfect. I think they're the best. Let's just talk about Matriculated then,
okay.
Since you brought it up.
Okay.
This is one I remembered, and I don't remember liking it that much. I thought it was fine. And going back this time, I appreciated it much more than any of the other ones.
Yeah, this is also, this is the longest one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And,
I didn't notice that.
It didn't
feel long. Detective story felt long. This
really,
one did not feel
this
long.
This one, it's the longest one, I'm pretty sure. And also, it's a bit of a slow burn at first. So go ahead and break this one down, and we'll just talk about it.
So essentially, the Matriculated is there's a group of survivors, and they are out, I think, just exploring the wasteland or whatever. And they have an alarm. They go back to base. Like, some robots are infiltrating. They capture one of the robots, and essentially, they put them in a robot matrix, like a human version of the Matrix, to mess with the robot's mind and strip it of its negative thoughts and energy to make...
To try to reprogram it. Or I guess... I guess so. To brutalize, to brainwash it. To turn it working for them.
Maybe... Not brainwash, because like I think one character said specifically at a point, we give it the choice.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to force it. We want to make it choose.
We want to make it understand why we act as humans.
It's a parallel almost like Morpheus and Neo. Like Morpheus kind of slowly easing Neo into this thing and awakening him to the Matrix in the real world. They kind of do that with the robot, but... Not through text or anything. It's like through these weird visual,
dude, it is,
trippy scenes.
To nobody who has ever taken mushrooms, this is the closest I can describe a really hardcore mushroom trip to you. Like, if you watch Matriculated, it is when that shit really starts going off and there are these crazy vibrant colors just shifting everywhere.
And just things happen, like, illogically. Like, the robot gets his head stuck and then his... skin starts to melt into a puddle and then falls like a hard ball into like a
it's
drain,
really weird.
It's
so trippy.
Yeah,
that's the best way I can describe this episode. It is just weirdly, but it's not a bad weird. It is interesting, and it makes you're constantly saying what?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here? And I think it's meant to be that way. They are trying to confuse the robot and show it the beauty that exists within the world outside of this harsh machine reality it's been exposed to its entire existence.
And then it eventually does, but it's almost like too little too late, because another set of robots infiltrates and kind of kills everyone except for like the girl who's left.
Which he kind of, I think he falls in love with
her. Yeah, I think so.
I think he learns love, kind of, or at least a compassion.
Yeah, and we should say, like, these survivors, when they go into this robot world, they're like, so the Matrix is your idealized version of yourself. It's like robot versions of these people. So it's the people are now kind of robots. It's a reverse Matrix, and it's
really cool. It's really well done. I forget who directed this. What's cool about these is that some of the biggest names in Japanese animation at the time did it. I know the guy that did Aeon Flux did two of these.
Yes.
And they are two really good ones. Yeah, I like Matriculated.
I do too.
There's not a lot in it. It's not very deep outside of the fact of what they're trying to do to the robot. It's visually stimulating.
I think it's not deep, but it does something completely new,
which
I appreciate. Which
is really cool. And it's something, again, I think you could really only do as a little... Yeah. 9-minute animated movie
or
whatever.
She has like a little pet, like
a little
sugar
monkey,
glider pet or
something
like that gets that hooked into the Matrix too. And I was like, what a weird and fucking Japanese thing too.
Yeah.
But like, it's also something you could never do in real life.
It's just, and it's cool. I like, you know, spoilers. I like that at the end, everybody dies.
It's a
very bleak
negative ending. Yeah.
Which
is
what
the
I would
Matrix.
Do
that's
is
why
the
I like
Matrix
the Matrix
to a T. Yeah.
Because it's like there are very high highs and then some fucking crushing lows.
Yeah.
Like,
it's pretty brutal, man. It's a brutal existence in a brutal world of uncaring machines running everything now. And that's the way I would imagine it going. So
4 out of 5.
Cool.
Out of 5.
Yeah.
I really like Matriculated.
Okay.
Let's rip this Band-Aid off. Let's go into Detective Story.
All right, man.
So this is your
favorite. I will
argue
in favor. I don't think it is my favorite, maybe. I do like this one a whole lot, though, man. It's really cool. I like what they try to do with
it. Is
it
all because of the style?
That is a very big part. And it's shot... I like... It's very black and white, but it's one of those where color pops in for a reason. For reasons. Colors pop in here and there. And I like that style of visual storytelling, too. I'm a big fan of it. It's just... I don't know. I like this world. I like the cool... it's very... Again, Japanese anime where they romanticize a Western aspect, and in this they've romanticized that private eye, and he's very hard boiled.
Yeah.
He stands up to agents. He meets Trinity. I like Trinity's in this one. They make a couple of guest appearances.
Yeah.
She's the Red Queen, right?
She is. I don't know if she has to be the Red Queen.
Yeah, she's the Red Queen. So he gets this, he starts researching and he starts finding out about this lady called the Red Queen, where this person and eventually gets in contact with her, and it turns out to be Trinity.
Mm-hmm. Because in The Matrix, Trinity had Neo follow the White Rabbit, and she had a line about through the looking glass, I think, on the computer or something. But yeah, that's it. That's the story. He follows Trinity for reason. I guess he's paid by the agents to find Trinity.
But
right?
I think, and I think Trinity is in return hoping to maybe unplug this guy.
To free him.
Yeah, and bring him into the fold. Because he's got something. I mean, it takes something to be able to even find them. And so he's got the something, and I like that. I like his cat in this. The cat's kind of a silly little...
There are a lot of cats
in
the Animatrix, which I realize this time going around. Yeah. Cats pop up quite a bit.
Yeah. They're in... I know they feature prominently in at least three of these stories.
Not dogs. I don't think there's a single dog. I can't remember a single dog. It's all cats.
Yeah, I'm not remembering a dog either.
Yeah.
Which but is I think cats are big in Japan, too.
Yeah, it makes sense. Hello Kitty and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so I don't know. I felt like the dialogue was kind of stilted. I like the hard-boiled kind of talking, but I just don't feel like it was good in this. And then, like I said, I feel like this is one of the ones, and in the Animatrix, there are, like, two or three shorts that I have an issue with because they don't do anything new. They just take, like, a piece from The Matrix and kind of retell it. So, like, this is essentially, like, Trinity finding Neo, but what if it wasn't Neo? What about the guys before Neo? So it's, like, it's not really a new concept, and then, like, spoiler, the guy ends up dying at the end. So, like, it's kind of, I don't know, it just seems like a throwaway episode. Like, it just, it feels like filler to me. It's all style, and I don't think there's a lot of substance.
It's very style heavy. Yeah. And I get what you're saying, and, like, the fact that it doesn't do, that is the cool thing about the Animatrix when it does the new things.
Yeah. And that's what I responded to.
It explores the new things. But, yeah. I do like this one. I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit it. It's very style heavy, and I like that. You know, as we discussed in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I'm a big fan of noir anyways.
Yep.
So that's a big reason why, honestly, this one resonates with
I knew it was like, as soon as I finished watching, I was like, I didn't like that one, and Kyle's going to love it.
Yep, and that's true. That's exactly what it is. So we don't have to really diverge on that one much more than that. I mean, that's really what it is. There's not a lot in there. It's just cool. It's cool looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1 out of 5.
1 out of 5? Okay.
Kyle disagrees, but 1 out of 5. So I'll go to the next one on my list, which is Program, which is the feudal Japan one.
That one is really fucking cool.
Yep, it's up there for me. This is one of my favorites, too.
This one is another one that was done by the guy who did Aeon Flux. This is one of the two that we will talk about. And he has that very...
Beautiful.
Yeah, oh my god, there's a lot of cool stuff in this one.
To counter me from just 2 minutes ago, I think this one also doesn't do anything new. This is, like, the same idea that's brought up in The Matrix between, like, Cypher and Agent Smith, like, the wanting to get out and go and kind of, like, testing somebody with that concept. So it's not nothing... It's also new.
It brings in, you know, the Morpheus Neo... Dojo
dynamic,
fight.
Dynamic, yeah.
Well, and that, and like, they're fighting in this simulation that is very Japan heavy.
And the guy talks very much like Morpheus.
Yeah, and here's something that I didn't really put together until I was watching the Animatrix after The Matrix. I just gotta come out and say this. There are a lot of ship captains in this universe that are black.
There are.
Which is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd never really picked up on that.
Yeah.
But they're, like... You know, and when you think about it, even going into the sequels, Nairobi or whatever.
Niobe.
Niobe. She is, you know, that's Jada Pinkett Smith. She's, it's just so weird to me. Like,
there's a lot of diversity.
Yeah, there's a lot of diversity, but I just thought it was, I'd never picked up on that. But there are a lot of, and Flight of the Osiris, the captain.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, and Morpheus, you know, it's just, I'd never picked up on this. And I wonder if there's some underlying symbolism in it that I'm not noticing or picking up or something. Cause
like, at this point, it's not a coincidence.
No.
It's surely, there must be like something significance
is there,
behind
and
it.
And I just don't know what, but I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. Because it just kept, it shows up like 3 times in the anime. I was like, wow, I've never noticed this.
Yeah.
But this is a big thing in this universe. So.
Also, I'm gonna sidebar again and go back to the Second Renaissance. How those open and end is through like the Zion Archives.
Yeah.
Which I never pieced together is like the big MacGuffin from The Matrix. Like Agent Smith wants to get to the Zion Archives.
Yeah, he wants the codes.
I was just like... Because, like, remembering The Matrix, I've seen it so many times. I don't remember that stupid plot point about the Zion Archives. This is like, he's a bad guy. He wants Morpheus because he wants to get out of the system. He wants to end it.
Yeah.
I completely forgot that it's the thing from the Second Renaissance that he's going for. He's trying to get access.
He not only wants the archives, he wants just the access to the Zion mainframe.
Yeah.
He wants to open the doors and get in there. And that comes into play in Final Flight of the Osiris when we get there.
It does. So. Yeah. But, all right, so, sorry. Feudal Japan, the program.
This has the coolest fights.
Coolest fights. And I think it's some of the best animation.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. It's visually, it's a big love letter to anime of itself.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. There's, like, the bamboo fight. There is I like the infinitely spawning corridors of the tissue paper doors. And when he opens one, you just see them all go.
Yeah. Yeah, very Matrix-like.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. Mm-hmm.
And then the rooftop fight.
That's so anime. Like, when he's so powerful, he slices that statue, and it just continuously slowly slides as he's giving his monologue.
Yep.
I love when he brings down this samurai sword with superpower, and she's just eyes closed, and she claps and catches it, snaps it off.
Stabs him with it.
It's so good, man. Yeah. It's such an awesome little... It's like...
Yeah, and it does... It's also another thing that this specific episode does so well is, like, we're talking about all the fights. That's the entire episode.
Yeah, this entire
episode is just a 10-minute fight scene with exposition and dialogue while they're fighting.
Yeah.
And it's so good. It doesn't have, like, the stop and flow kind of breaking points that some of the other episodes do. It's like, well, here's a scene, and now exposition. And then here's some fight, and then some more exposition. This is just, like... perfectly paced.
Cool. Yeah, I agree. I like this one a lot.
Mm-hmm. Five out of five.
Five out of five.
Love it.
I agree with that one.
All right. Next one is Beyond, which is the ghost story.
Oh, man. I really like this one.
The kid's ghost story. Which is, you know what this is?
What?
This is the scene from Thor the Dark World.
Oh.
With the fucking portal to the Aether, and the kids are playing with the shoe in the portal, the fucking homeless kids. It's the same thing. Like, they totally wholesale ripped it off from Beyond.
Yeah. Well, and what's really cool... What I like about this one is, again, this one is one where really nothing really happens in this one.
No.
What you are really shown is what starts to happen in areas of the Matrix where code is bad and things are corrupted.
Yes.
And it also explains what I like about this. It brings it into a real world because everybody treats this house as a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they assume ghosts are affecting what's happening here. And there's a lot of weird, surreal things that happen, like going through doors here and coming out over here. There's the anti-gravity thing that the kids like to jump into. Like, they jump off the roof and then they know...
They fall, like, just a foot
from
right before they hit the ground.
That's really cool. There's, like, some weird fractured things happening.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you know, storytelling-wise, not a lot happens. This girl is overhearing these kids talk about it, and she goes in to investigate with it with her cat.
Yep.
She has a cat. It's just them showing you all the weird things that happen when the Matrix doesn't work right in certain areas. And eventually... agents come in and they cordon it off. They don't kill anybody. They just, you know, authority figures shove them out of the way, and they're going to fix it and clean up that code at some point and make it look like, oh, well, this is nothing weird here now. Mm-hmm. So, and that's basically the story.
It's just
really cool to watch because there's a lot of cool things that happen in it.
It's an interesting idea and concept, and this is why I like The Matrix Reloaded. I'm a firm defender of The Matrix Reloaded because I think it introduces a lot of neat, interesting ideas. I think there are definitely flaws and faults with it.
I'm glad you say this because after doing this, I want to revisit them.
Yeah. I still think the third one just really
And we'll get into
it,
that
but...
more when we start talking about The Matrix. But I would like to revisit them. And,
oh, yeah.
I am a very, very anti 2 and 3. To me...
Even 2?
Oh, yeah. I don't like 2 at all. To me... Ooh. In my perfect world, it's The Matrix and the Animatrix, and then nothing else.
I would put The Matrix Reloaded and Animatrix on the same page.
And we'll get into it.
I think there are highs and lows to both of them.
Well, I'll bring it in when we get into The Matrix. I won't even talk about it now, but I'll explain my reasonings there.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and continue. So that was Beyond.
But anyway,
what
Beyond.
Do you rate this one?
So I'd give it a 3 or a 4.
Okay.
It's somewhere in there. Like,
I'd put it at a 4.
It.
I rate everything here high. I love every one of these.
Like I said, I think it's a really interesting idea, and I kind of love the exploration. It sounds like there's going to be a but there is no but.
Yeah,
it's a good idea, and this is what I was going to say about The Matrix Reloaded is they introduce the idea of the Matrix glitches and the coding issues are what leads to like ghosts and werewolves and vampires. And it leads into like some interesting things that like, that's a really cool explanation for it.
It's cool.
And it's these ideas that I like, and I don't think the sequels really flesh out on it, and that's what was really disappointing. But like, Beyond does that. Beyond talks about the ghosts and the haunted house, and I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
cool.
That's a good one. I like that one. I hate the fucking star tattoo on the character's face.
Eh.
It's too Japanese. It's too much Japanese.
But, I mean, it is.
I know.
This one takes place in Japan.
But you have
too.
Like a very bored white girl talking out of this very cutesy Japanese star face, pink haired or blue haired girl, and it's just
See, but I think she's bored. Again, if this chick's story had gone on, she might be one that is pulled out of the Matrix because she has all of the telltale. She has the disconnected from reality, the just not understanding or accepting really what's happening. Yeah. She's being shown these things. So I had her storyline continued, I could see
probably
her maybe.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yeah, I like it.
Me too. I don't have much negative to say. I just wasn't like over the moon with it.
Okay.
But I like it. I like it a lot. The next one, Kid's Story.
Yeah.
Man, this one.
See, this is another one that I think we're going to clash on because I really like this one.
I'm
for
okay with it.
The same reason that I like Detective Story.
Hmm.
There's not a lot story-wise going on here. This is actually a pretty short one. I really like this animation style, though. It's completely different from all the others. It's very painted, almost.
Man. So Detective Story is my least favorite story narrative-wise. This and the World Record are my least favorite animation styles.
Yeah, and I do understand that. I know a lot of people, when I talk about and when we watch this, a lot of people don't like this one.
Kid's Story, I think, is my least favorite. Like,
I like this one, and I like...
It's rough and jaggy, and I
like that about it, and how I've always interpreted it, again, you know, I'm looking at it in the style of this kid is disconnected. He's kind of just floating through. And so everything in this episode just kind of is floating and not fully connected to the real world.
Yeah.
It doesn't come into focus a lot because he's very unfocused until when he's trying to escape.
Yeah.
Which is a really cool chase scene. He's running away on his skateboard.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. It's very fluid. And that, again, I think lends itself to that art style animation because things just ripple and move and... It flows. It does. I can see a lot, you know, again, people I show this to, this is the one that they probably don't like the most.
Yeah. Actually, story-wise, I think it's okay, and it's captivating enough. Like, I don't dislike it. Like, I dislike Detective Story. I don't dislike this one. I think it's good. I just don't like the art style.
What's cool about this one, too, much like Detective Story, Morpheus, Trinity, and Neo, it's actually them coming in to do voices. Yeah. Keanu Reeves is doing Neo. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Fishburne is there. Morpheus and Trinity's there. And
the kid is a part of the
Matrix
sequels.
Yeah,
right?
He actually
I don't know if
does...
he is in the Reloaded.
Yeah,
at
he
all?
Is in Reloaded, but he's not got a big part.
Okay, his
which...
big parts in 3 were.
Yeah, and it's
does the mech.
It's cool. I like that they, you know, it gives him story. I like that that becomes a thing. And again, I think that lends itself because all of these, I think, except for one or two, were written by Larry and Andy Wachowski. They had a vision.
Mm-hmm.
Going forward and what they wanted to do with this. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And I like that it's narratives involved within the bigger world. I guess my one complaint, well, I don't think it's a complaint though, because you don't have to watch these to enjoy and watch the other movies, unlike the Star Wars prequels, which we had issues with.
Where literally all the good stuff
happens outside of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, these are just nice flavors.
I agree.
That add a lot to the world of the Matrix itself.
They're footnotes.
So, yeah.
Like, you have the whole story if you want it, but then at the bottom of the page, there's some more text that'll give you just a little bit more insight.
Yeah.
But you don't need to.
No.
And, yeah, that's. I think most of these do that just right, where it's not like you're missing something if you don't see these. It's just like, yeah, that was really cool. Like, that makes
me
enjoy the Matrix a little bit more.
Totally.
And this is one of those ones. It's like, I don't think it really does anything much outside of that, but it's just an... It's a nice little addendum.
Yeah.
3 out of 5.
Cool. Okay.
I like it.
Yeah.
You're not going to have a lot of low stuff on my list. But the next one, World Record.
Yeah.
I don't like this one.
Again, this is the other one that people...
Yeah.
I like this one. Again, this is the other one done by the guy that did Aeon Flux. And you can tell it in the animation style.
Mm-hmm.
This one is about an Olympic sprinter
who,
See, and I like the story of this one in the fact that he pushes himself... so hard that he actually wakes himself up from the Matrix.
Yes, he pushes past like the runner's wall that you hit like after running a certain time and your body kind of starts to shut down. He just pushes past it and he starts to see code because he just pushes past it. And I think that's an interesting idea. I hate the style of it. I cannot get into it. Like, I don't like the weird floaty bodies that are just constantly moving and their muscles are like
rippling.
When he really starts to super hit it.
But
I also like there's a reporter in this too who has like a fucking jacket wide open and just a bra underneath.
Yeah.
And she's a reporter, like, Come on, Japan. You can do better than that.
Not only
like,
at the time that he was doing... I mean, again, you got to remember, this is the guy that did Aeon Flux, one of the most sexualized things I've ever seen in my life. He also did Rain, which is a fantastical...
I've never seen Rain.
It's a fantastical retelling of the Alexander the Great story.
Okay.
But, the best way to describe the costume that Alexander the Great wears in this is, if you've ever seen Zardon with Sean Connery, or at least that picture of him in the desert with that red bikini and the suspenders, that's exactly, like, it's very pubic bulge area heavy.
Yeah.
He's a very sexualized artist, which is a big thing in Japan for some people. Yeah. Sexuality is a big thing that they push, and that's, man, again, Aeon Flux is one of the most sexualized things I've ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah,
and
it's you could just turn it on and think you're watching porn.
Yeah, or you know, that's if you are flipping through the channels and you with like your mom and that comes on, that's gonna make you really uncomfortable to watch any episode of Aeon Flux.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really cool show though. I love that.
I remember liking it when I was younger, but I've not watched it since.
There's some weird shit that happens in that show, man. So
yeah, but I believe it.
Stylistically, it works with this. What I like about that is the idea of somebody pushing themselves so hard that they wake up from the Matrix and they wake up in the real world. And in this instance, it doesn't fully reject him. It puts him back in, but it fries him in the Matrix world. He's never the same. He's kind of comatose and wheelchair bound when he gets put back in because his brain, I guess, it saw the reality and it can't accept...
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of shuts down. And what I like about that is that, you know, this plays.
It was overclocked and burnt out.
Yes, absolutely. He fried his circuits. In the Matrix, you know, there is a protocol for this, and that's what I love about this universe is that there's such a depth to it, and that's what happens to Neo. Like, he wakes up and the system understands that, and it just rejects him and flushes him out. It doesn't. It's just like, oh well, he's out. For some reason, they put this guy back in, maybe because he wasn't fully out. Whereas with Neo, it like when he took the red pill, it allowed him to wake up more.
That leaves like a question. Like when you start getting into this, like, well, why didn't it work for him?
Yeah, and again, I think it has to do with the pill that he was probably taking. It was probably some sort of code in the Matrix that allowed it to disconnect him more, whereas this guy, he did it himself, he wasn't shown, it was sort of quick, and they could just push him back in, so that's what I've always assumed.
Well, you could go to, well, and this is where, like, the Animatrix is good, but it also causes some plot points, because, like, in the detective story, the detective starts to get taken over by an agent.
Yeah.
And at what point, like, why couldn't they do that to Neo in the Matrix then before, because, like, they knew where he was, they captured him. Like, why couldn't they just do that? Like, why leave that big thing open?
In the detective story, they started to take him over to get to Trinity. They wanted Trinity. And the Matrix, they're kind of hoping that, you know, Neo will just
work with them against...
Yeah.
Because they try to turn him, but then Neo's, like, so flippant. Like, they just put the Sentinel in his belly button and then cover his mouth and he wakes up. And it's... why not just take him over and then Trojan horse him into the Morpheus and like done?
Well, because Morpheus would know, he would see in the code that it's not Neo anymore, that he's been taken over by an agent. So I mean that wouldn't work. I guess they're still trying to hope that he will lead them to Morpheus, which is why they put the tracker in him. So
okay.
I broke all this down, buddy. I thought about this a lot.
I'll allow it. That was a good thought.
So that's. I always call this one runner's high, but it is world record because he sets a world record for fastest sprint.
I like runner's high better.
I think it works. I've always called it that in my head, but he does set a world record before he fries his brain and then crosses the finish line in a tumbling, weird fashion.
Yeah, he whiffs it.
Yeah, he sure does. So what do you rate this one?
2 out of 5. I like the idea. I just, it didn't gel with me stylistically. I don't think the dialogue was anything special, and it's like, this is a cool idea. I wish it was in the hands of somebody else.
Yeah.
2 out of 5. Not okay. As bad as a Texas Story. And that's it. Like, those are the ones I didn't like.
Okay.
Like, everything else is positive. So.
So the only one we have left is
Final Flight. That's okay. It. And I think we talked about this last week slightly when going over the Animatrix, and you said this might be your least favorite.
It is, and it still is after rewatching them all. You know, and I think I talked about this in our list episode. I went to the movies to see the movie Dreamcatcher just because this was shown before it.
Oof.
And I stayed through Dreamcatcher, and I didn't think Dreamcatcher was terrible. I mean, it was fun. We could argue it. I really liked the book. I hadn't read the book before I saw the movie.
Yeah.
Again, you know, if we want to break it down, the worst Stephen King stories are the full-length novels that they try to cram into a movie.
Agree.
But anyways, so I went to it just to, and you know, I bought the fucking ticket. Me and my buddy went. I mean, we're going to watch the fucking movie. We're there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so not knowing anything going in, it wasn't bad. I mean, we got enjoyment out of the movie. So
Dreamcatcher. Oh, okay. Dreamcatcher or Final Flight?
Dreamcatcher. Yeah. Final Flight, when I was the first thing I'd seen, you know, this was the first one that we had ever gotten a taste of. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool. I think this one has aged the worst because of the fact that it was computer generated.
I would argue it holds up pretty well.
It looks pretty good, but there's some uncanny valley.
Oh yeah.
That happens. Like when she's falling through the power grid, it's just so weird. Like I get what they were trying to do, but it doesn't work for me. When they're fighting too, there's not a lot of weight in the opening scene to them.
No, there's not a lot of weight at all in the fighting.
No, and I don't mean weight like emotionally. I just mean in the physical realm of it. Like,
yeah.
And I get in the Matrix, people do floaty weird things, but they just don't seem attached to this.
Oh, that's a good point. Like in the Matrix, there's not a lot of weight either, because like Neo does himself, where like he'll balance on one hand and like kick with both feet in the air, and like that feels weightless too, though, right?
Not really, because of the like what I guess I'm not describing the way that it feels to me, but like just in their movements and the way that they like it's like they weigh 2 pounds rather than fully grown adults existing in a world in the Matrix.
Yeah, and I think that's a byproduct of game company too, and it feels like a video game cinematic.
Yes, it does. And there are some cool things in it. I'm not going to hate. I mean, I still think it's good. This is my least favorite one though.
Interesting. I like it. I like the sparring between them, and then just the abrupt, here are the Sentinels. Oh shit, time to panic, we gotta get this message out, and just kind of how dark and bleak it is too.
Yeah,
it's just a shit ending.
I mean, you know, going in, I mean, this one is called Final Flight of the Osiris, so.
And this is like the last one they play on Netflix, so it leaves you with just like this dark note. It's like, oh,
well,
wow, that's...
This is one, outside of Kid Story, is the only one that directly involves the sequels. And this one sets up what is happening in 2 and 3 with the machines knowing where Zion is at this point and just saying fuck it and trying to drill down to it.
I feel like there's a lot of references to the Osiris in the second and third movie too.
They talk about them, and the sacrifice that they made. Again, this one, a black captain.
Black captain.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
also, lots of sexualization, and the Asian woman is stripped down to a thong and bra, and there's a really prominent butt shot.
Couple
and
gratuitous
like,
butt shots.
Oh, okay. Okay, Square. Okay.
Again, but you know, this is the this
way
is
to
where,
go, Japan. You did it again.
This is where we differentiate again. You know, maybe, but like, who the fuck is the target market for this sort
that's,
of thing?
That's what I'm saying is who is the target audience, because they do
I
that, and then they strip down the black captain too.
But you never see what he's packing, which I think
you do
they
at the
should have
very
done.
End.
Do you?
Like you see like a slight glimpse when he turns around when they exit the simulation.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Again, you know, it's marketed to young to middle aged dudes.
It's just weird. Weird though, coming from Larry Lana. I'm fucked up. What's the brother's name?
Andy.
Larry and Andy / Lana and Andy, who have like these gender, not I don't want to say issues, but like these gender.
Well, I mean,
they're trying to. it feels like in a lot of their later movies, they really try to address like this non-binary gender and like how it's a very liquid thing and not try to pander to one gender over the other.
That's because of Larry slash Lana, who
So it seems
is Larry
weird the kind of pandering in this one.
But again, you know, who knows what it is?
Because I would also argue in I think The Matrix. I don't remember any sexualization of anybody.
No. There's
and
not.
You could have easily, especially with your idealized self. Like, how hard would it be to sexualize?
Well, okay, I take that back. There is a bit of sexuality
in The woman
Matrix.
In red?
Well, there's the woman in red. And Trinity, while they don't get gratuitous with the butt, I mean, she is wearing tight leather constantly.
But everybody's wearing tight leather.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where it comes back into. So, I mean, let's go ahead and end this, because, I mean, that's Final Flight of the Osiris. It's cool.
4 out of 5.
Okay.
4 out of 5 for me.
That would be my lowest ranking one. I'd probably put that one at a 2.
Oh, okay.
2.
Okay.
So, let's jump into this big bad beast.
The Matrix. Now we're going to switch gears and just have a love fest up in here.
Fawn.
Yeah.
Fawn over this.
This movie's so good.
Dude, yes.
It's a classic. It is anybody in our generation. They've seen this movie. They love this movie. I can't think of many people who would argue.
Yeah. Here's one thing, you know, I brought this up when we were discussing Fear and Loathing. Mm. When it comes to The Matrix, I cannot believe this movie got made.
No.
Imagine, you know, the film era of the 99, I think this is when this came out.
1999.
Doing this big budget, extremely fucking weird sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Taking that giant risk on this with the actors involved, the budget, and 2 unknown directors, I cannot believe this movie was greenlit and made. It's not a safe movie, but it spawned. Yeah. It was fucking groundbreaking.
Especially since, too, I think the movie right before that Keanu Reeves did was Johnny Mnemonic, which is like a huge flop.
It was
like
terrible.
A very weird
and
sci-fi
that,
one.
It was another weird sci-fi
like
one.
That alone should have been like, oh, maybe we should not do this movie with Keanu. But they did, and I think there are also several movies around that time too, like Dark City came out just slightly before.
That's
which is also a very dark, dreary sci-fi mind fuck of a movie that I don't think was for the masses. And then what was the Christian Bale one, Equilibrium?
Yeah, but that came out after The Matrix. Equilibrium,
I think by like a year though. Like
I thought it was like 2002, 2003. I
think
thought it was a lot
closer.
Later.
I think
was
it's it? A lot closer than you think.
Because I thought that they took a lot from The Matrix.
I think it's one that came out just slightly after, and people were like, oh, we always seen it in The Matrix. But it was like it was in production about the same time, and then it got shelved because of The Matrix.
Mm.
And then they put it out like a year later.
And
I
it
think.
Definitely didn't have the budget of The Matrix. And that's what's crazy to me is that I don't think The Matrix had a giant budget. It had a pretty big budget.
I
for
wish
what
I
it was.
It
I wish I would have too. But I do know, and I think that's what makes The Matrix great to me compared to 2 and 3, where with 2 and 3, they basically had carte blanche, were given blank checks, do whatever you fucking want.
Yep.
And I think that makes the movie suffer, because The Matrix definitely was done with restraints that they had to work within. And I think that is going to push the art to make it better rather than just doing whatever you want.
I agree with that.
So that's where my real big problems with 2 and 3 come in, is the fact that much like the prequels of Star Wars, there were nobody was telling them no.
There was no committee.
Yeah.
It was just,
Not a committee, but there was nobody to just say, hey, this is kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just people being like, oh yes, that's fantastic, you're geniuses, that's amazing, everybody's going to love it, do it.
Yeah.
Which I think is what happened in The Matrix. They didn't...
Yeah.
They had to do things within constraint. And they still got... This is absolutely their vision. This is a Larry Andy vision. And it... God damn, this movie's so good, man. It fucking flows. It works.
It does.
So well. I have some things that I just know personally because I've...
Go for it, yeah.
...researched this. Another thing that I think makes The Matrix work better than 2 and 3, and they so in The Matrix, when they would be setting up a scene, they would rough film every scene with a camcorder, and they would get in different positions and find and then watch that and find what worked before they did it with an actual camera.
Okay.
For 2 and 3, they had a computer program created that did this, and I feel that is why those also feel disconnected, because You're not doing it with the actors. You're not getting in there and doing it yourself. You're doing it at a computer program with digital models. And while it still might work for you, it gives it that false feeling that I feel 2 and 3 have. They don't have the heart and the warmth that this one has. You can see it in a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff if you ever do watch it. You can see there's one where I believe it's Larry is laying on his back with just a camcorder, and there's Neo and Morpheus standing up here, and it's actually Keanu and Lawrence Fishburne. Yeah. It's not stand-ins. He's just trying to establish what's going to work best, what angle is going to look the coolest. And I feel they lost that in 2 and 3. Because the fact that they had a nearly limitless budget. So
what else you got?
I love, again, piggybacking off that, every shot in this movie for that reason has a purpose. Every shot is trying to show you something.
Yeah, I don't feel like there's fatty parts of the movie that need to be trimmed.
Yeah.
I knew going in, like, this is going to be like a movie we both love. So I really tried to look for the bad or the negative things. I don't think there is anything you can really cut out.
Nothing that, unless you're just being incredibly nitpicky.
Even then, I don't think there's much to nitpick. The Oracle has a reason. The training scenes have a reason. Yeah. Everything has a reason.
And they work well. Like, when Morpheus and Neo are fighting and, you know, Mouse runs in and tells everybody and everybody just gets up and runs. Yeah. It's exciting for them because it's also exciting for us. Like, holy shit, they're fighting. This is going to be fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, and it is cool. And we get the first hint of the Morpheus taunt, which Neo turns around where he holds the hand out and directs him in to come attack him. That's such a fucking cool scene, man. Mm-hmm. And then it's a callback later on.
And it's mostly practical. Like, no CG or digital effects.
A lot of wire work in this movie. I know that Carrie Ann Moss practiced a lot on the wires. And not only her, Keanu practiced his fights daily. And what was crazy, another behind-the-scenes thing, he had broken his neck before shooting this. And
Related to the movie or?
No, I don't think it was related to the movie. I think maybe he had neck surgery. Because he had neck issues. But he is in almost all of the behind-the-scenes stuff. He's been a full neck brace.
Huh.
And he didn't get that removed until, like, a couple weeks before they really started shooting. And he still couldn't do a lot of head movement.
Yeah.
And so Wu Ping, the fight choreographer, worked with that. And Neo fights sort of stiff. And it makes sense because he's just coming into it. He's not fluid. He is sort of stiff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was adapted because Keanu couldn't really move his head at all. But you can still see him practicing these fights with Lawrence Fishburne, and they practiced and practiced. And you can tell it in these fights because, man, they're just so fluid and good.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Some of the best fight choreography in a long time outside of, like, a Jackie Chan movie.
So I like some of the fights in the sequels, but nothing tops, like, the Neo Anderson train fight. The subway.
Oh man, that's my favorite fight in this movie, dude.
It's so good.
Yeah,
it's so good.
And that's another thing that I will bring in. This movie, again, you know, every shot has a purpose. It is so good at showing the progression of Neo.
Mm-hmm.
Testament to Keanu Reeves, man. He gets a lot of shit. He's so good in this, man, because he comes into his own, and, like, you feel for Neo, and, like, you get excited when he fucking decides. Oh, he's not going to run, because everybody else talking about the agents, you know, just be like us, run. You're not going to beat him.
Yeah.
Before
they do a really good job of building up these agents as something terrifying with how they talk and play them out. So, like, when they finally do show up, like, you do feel that. You're like, holy shit, something's going to go down. This is bad. Like,
well, and even before this, okay, so, and it's cool how they show the progression of Neo. So we see Neo and Morpheus fight, and Morpheus beats him. He beats the shit out of him. Then we see...
Though Neo keeps up.
Neo does keep up, but he gets bested pretty handily.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see Morpheus fight an agent, and it's the exact same thing, only the opposite. The agent beats the fuck out of Morpheus.
Though, when Morpheus pops out of that wall...
It's so cool,
man. It's one of the best scenes. How fucking badass.
And, Hugo Weaving. Dude, Agent Smith is one of my favorite parts of this entire series. Agent Smith is so good.
Agreed.
It's weird because he's so monotone and dry, but there's still so much going on there. And there is a definite feeling of dread when Agent Smith is around. But again, coming back to it, you know, so we see Morpheus fight Agent Smith, and Agent Smith just beats the shit out of him. And then we see Neo fight Agent Smith, and Neo holds his own against him. I mean, he's putting hurt on Agent Smith. He's not just getting beat up. He eventually does get bested, but he comes into it, and he comes out the better using human ingenuity and the fact that Smith is trying to hold him in front of that subway.
Mr. Anderson.
My
That's
name is
the
Neo.
Sound of inevitability.
There's so many good things like that. You know, I could quote so many good lines
It's always like, I always quote Smith. I love Smith.
Yeah, well, like, you know, hey, man, I sent two groups of cops in there. I think they'll be all right. Lieutenant, your men are already dead. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Oh, and it's just so good. But then, he jumps up, knocks Anderson or Agent Smith off of him and does that cool backflip up and just barely makes it. And then Agent Smith walks out of the train because of the fact that agents can take over anybody. Mm-hmm. So.
And then it leads into, like, I think a really cool scene that just wouldn't even happen in the sequels, where he's, like, running through the streets and, like, the agents are turning and he's, like, terrifying. And he's, like, having to get directions from
Tank.
Yes, because Dozer's the brother. Tank, and he's, like, going in through the doors, and, like, there's my favorite joke in, like, the entire series is, like, left. No, your other left.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, this real quick throwaway. Like,
because he does
goes
go right,
the right
too.
Door.
Yeah.
And he's, like, no, your other left. And, like, he has to correct, and Neo goes into the right door finally. But it's, like, that scene is, like, so tense and dramatic and, like, fucking, you couldn't do that in the sequels because he's so powerful and the agents are nothing and it just, all your dramatic tension's gone in the sequels.
What's really cool, another thing, this movie is so fantastically written. It daunts me every time to think about all the things that they were thinking about and including into the writing of this movie. And I'm like, God, like, I just think about me trying to do that. And it would be terrible. I could not write anything like this as much as I want to. Like, the whole fact with the Oracle. So he goes to see the Oracle, who the Oracle has prophesied to Morpheus that he will find the one.
And that
she
Trinity
will
fall
in
love
with
the
one.
Which I don't like. I'm okay with the Morpheus stuff. I'm okay with the Neo prophecy where it's like that. I told you what you need to know. So I'm telling you, you're not the one.
But see,
to get you in the mindset of being the one.
That's another thing I love. She never says he's not the one. She never says it. He says,
that's true. Yeah,
I'm not the one.
Says, what
she
do
just
you think?
Says,
do you think you're the one? He's like, no, I don't. And she's like, that's okay.
She's like, sorry, kiddo.
Yeah.
And then she says, not right now.
Does she say not right
now? She says, not yet. It's like you're waiting for something. But the way that I'm butchering it, but the way that they do it, it's still leading you to think that, like, oh, he's not the one. And he's not going to be the one. And that's just such good writing and good.
Oh, yeah. Because immediately afterwards, she tells him something to the effect of, you're going to have a choice where you're going to die or Morpheus is going to die. You're not the one, or it's alluded that he's not the one, even though he is the one, that you are going to either die or you are going to be the cause of Morpheus to die.
Mm-hmm.
So then when Morpheus gets captured by Smith and he has to go in, like, they're setting you up. Like, they're making you think Neo is going to sacrifice himself to get Morpheus out.
Or Morpheus is going to die.
And then Neo gets shot and Neo dies.
See, and that was a thing that, you know, I've read about and researched and discussed this movie on the internet since
it's the resurrection of Christ.
It's not so much that. I don't think that comes into play until later on. I mean, I guess he is the Christ figure.
This is the Christian movie. Like, the other ones are, like, Buddhist, and then, like, there's another one. But this is the Christian, the heavily Christian-based
movie. What I like, and the way that I've always seen that, is that, again, you know, the first shot that happens, he breaks into that door and Smith is waiting on this other side as he says, your other left. He walks in, Smith is there, and he shoots him, and Neo kind of moves, but it doesn't register. And, like, that's him as the one understanding that, like, this isn't real. He's the first one to get there because it doesn't become real until he looks at his blood. And he's just been hit with a fucking 50 caliber handgun bullet. That will fucking wreck you.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't register, and you can see it in the performance. Like, he just sort of sits there until, and that's him not accepting what has happened until he looks.
That's an interesting way to interpret that scene.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily interpret it that way, because I feel like there have been war movies too where somebody gets shot or dies and they have like that slow realization, like they're dead before they know it. And I think that happens a lot in these type of movies. So I didn't register that, because doesn't he also fall to the ground? Like,
well,
he dies, right? Like, he falls over.
He looks at the thing, and then he looks back at Smith, and then Smith unloads a full clip and walks him backwards and is emptying a clip of this handgun into him. So, yeah, and you see him in the real world getting rocked around. Yeah. And
blood coming out of his mouth.
Yeah. And then Trinity tells him she's been alluding to what the Oracle, and I think it works.
That's the one thing I don't like. I think it takes away any agency from her part, and I think it's like Deus Ex Machina. It's just a plot point on nowhere. It's you can't die because I love you, and I was told I would fall in love with the one, so you're the one. So get up, Neo. I love you. And I just, even as a kid, I was like, that's hackneyed. Like, I don't like that.
In a movie this great and this epic, if that's the most hackneyed thing.
It is such a small point. Yeah. But, like, that's the only thing I don't like.
I want to come back, because I keep thinking of things. Like, I love when Neo, in the subway fight, when Neo knocks Agent Smith down, and Smith, when he gets back up, he just slams both his fists on the ground and comes up. Oh, my God, man. And they're doing this fight, and Neo goes to punch him, and Smith grabs his wrist, and then he just pokes his fingers out and hits him in the throat. Oh, that's so awesome, man.
I hate that.
What? That's one of my favorite things.
That is my least favorite thing, when the fingers snap off, like, comically, and he goes, and he does, like,
the
little choke
thing.
He hits
him in the throat. I think it's cool. It's an adaptability that Neo has that the machines don't think and plan for. Again, I think it shows the human ingenuity and adaptability that we have, because we don't deal in the absolute like a machine does. And that's what this movie is about. It's about the overcoming of the human will. Neo's not going to give up. His fist has been stopped, but he can still reach him, and he hits him in the throat.
I like that interpretation on your part.
Yeah.
I really think it was there for like a little comedic relief. Like, see, it just felt like...
I laugh at everything, and I don't laugh at that part. I get excited.
I don't understand that. Like, that's... It seems like Three Stooges. It's like the eye, like the fingers and the eyes. Like, you put up the fingers to block, and then like two fingers come in. But it's you know what it is? It's Ash from Army of Darkness. It's an Ash move.
It could be
something that just seems
to me. You know, and again, I just see. I've always interpreted it as that way.
It's like a half second thing. So like I'm talking about this very small thing.
Had they focused in on it, I think then I could see your interpretation. But the fact that it's so quick, it's just. You understand what has happened, and they just move on. They don't focus on that. It's not played up for laughs. It's just it's him. Mm-hmm. He's not stopping. He's not going to give up. Even if you stop it, he's going to hit you. He's going to keep fighting, because that's the human will. That's what we have that separates us, that's the way I interpret it.
I would have never brought up, because it is such a small thing, but you're like, I love this part. I was like, oh, okay. Well,
but you understand
what. But
why.
It does.
Yeah.
It moves on so quick, and I think...
Well, and again,
your interpretation, I like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a valid reason.
That's this whole movie. Mm-hmm. One thing, you know, it's a pretty popular thing, and this is just the movie as a whole. And I watched this movie with Mandy, and I'll get back to Mandy again. Ooh. But I pointed it out to her, and I like to point it out to some people, because some people don't know, but the shots, when they're in the Matrix, there's a green film put over the entire shot. And when you're in the real world, there's a blue.
Very blue.
And it's just this nice little subtle thing that separates the two visually. That it is
subtle. Yeah. I think it's much more pronounced in the sequels. Like,
it is.
It's even bluer tint. It's even greener.
Yeah, it's really nice in this one.
It's the perfect amount of subtlety.
It's so good.
The green's good because it relates back to the green binary code. Mm-hmm. And like it's a smart thing. It's just a smart thing.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else? Because I have some stuff. Unless you have.
I mean, we can talk about your stuff. I love the lobby fight scene in the lobby. Yes. The gun shootout. Yeah. It's one of the greatest gunfights in ever.
Uh-huh.
I actually have a figurine of Neo doing the cartwheel and he's holding it.
I know that toy.
Yeah, I have that.
I wanted it. I never got it.
I have that one. I have a Morpheus from 2. There's a Trinity where she's doing the crazy kick thing. I wish I had that one.
That
one scene I know where Carrie Ann Moss is running up the wall. I think she said she practiced that on the ropes for like a month. Every day, just to get it smooth. And you can tell, like, it works, and it's very smooth in that scene. I love when he comes through the metal detectors, and the security guard, very lackadaisical, sir, do you have any metal objects that you might be holding? And Neo just opens his coat, and there's like 40 guns, and he just goes, holy shit!
Yep.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm gonna jump off from that point. Soundtrack, I think the score is amazing. Yeah. I think it's one of the greatest scores. I do not like the soundtrack.
It's very 90s.
It is so dated. Rob Zombie is in the club scene. And
the Dragula song. And that song was... Yeah. It's like a year later, the song that would be everywhere is that fucking Butterfly song. Come my lady. Come my lady. Tell me,
Crazy Town.
God damn, that song is in every fucking movie from like 2001, 2003. Especially a fucking summer, teenage, middle-aged... Oh, God. That's everywhere.
You should never put licensed music in your movies unless it is a period piece and you're setting a period, unless you are doing it anachronistically like Tarantino does, or if it is like about like that specific singer, like a biopic. Like if you're doing a Beach Boys movies, put Beach Boys songs in it. That's fine. Otherwise, scores. Orchestral scores, because your movie's going
to
date so
bad. I agree to a point. There are things that don't work, but there are other ones that do work. And the ones that work...
Song-wise, in the Matrix.
Okay. The ones that do work, and that I still love them to this day, are the techno ones. And they Some make sense in the setting.
Some of them, yeah.
I like that lobby theme. I like the...
And it's very iconic. You hear that, and it's immediately like, that is Matrix sound.
Yeah. I like those. Dragula is awful.
Yes.
Thankfully, it's not...
And the movie ends with, like, Rage Against the Machine,
I will argue, I fucking love Rage Against the Machine.
I do, too, but oh, my God, I'm 13 again.
I do get that. What is nice about the Rage one is that it's more setting up for the end credits, because it doesn't really start to come in until... It is a bit of a cheesy music video vibe, because Neo hangs up the phone and he slow walks out, and then we get to see the beginning of the new Neo power of flight, which is fucking cool. Yeah. And then the song fits, because Zach De La Rocha is screaming "Wake up," and that's what everybody's been telling you to do in this entire movie.
Yeah.
So it works really well there. I get what you're saying, and I agree to a point. There are some dated ones. I will say this is one of the only movie soundtracks I own, and I do love to listen to this whole thing, except for Dragula. I will skip Dragula.
It's a small thing.
Going back to my fifth favorite movie, Drive, I think the soundtrack is great there.
Oh no, I do too. But, I have no issue with Drive.
But it's not orchestral. It is. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but I think it's also but because of the time, too, because it's very 80s, and that film feels very 80s, so it sets a mood in a period.
Because
this
of the
just
fact
feels
that,
like, of the time. Like, it was of the time, and now
it
it's
was
not
of the late
time.
90s, and that is the bad part. Like, they do...
And the style in this movie is, like, the first scene where Neo opens the door, and, like, he's selling the disc to, like, the leather people. I just, like, had a thought to myself. I was like, so... Maybe I wasn't old enough to go to these bars in the 90s, but, like, did people dress like this in leather like this?
I don't know.
Or
is
this
just
some weird style that they pretended was a thing? Because I just don't remember this being, like, a big thing.
The underground goth club scene. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it either. It could have been. I know goth was a big thing during my high school years. There were a lot of goth chicks, but they didn't wear a lot of leather.
No,
it was black.
Yeah, and black coats and stuff, but not leather. There's so much leather in the Matrix that...
And it's even worse in the sequels.
Oh, yeah. They have, like, leather trench coats and...
Like, Neo wears those weird... In this one, his trench coat isn't leather. It's actually a cloth.
Yeah.
Which is
and it
cool.
It looks fine. Like, he looks...
I don't like
He's
his...
not too leathered up. Like, some of his crew members are very leathered up, but...
So, here, you know, bringing this back, here's something cool that I also only recently found out. So, one of the... coolest underrated characters that you don't get a lot of. I like Switch.
Yes.
Who she wears all white leather, and she has bleached white hair, and she says one of my favorite lines, which is not like this.
Yeah.
Not like this. But I guess this she was originally in the real world a dude. And that's playing off of
Larry. I wish they would have done this.
Lana's I guess confusion about who she was, because she is Lana now, Lana Wachowski. She has transitioned into a woman.
Yeah.
And I just like that. I kind of wish they would have done it too. I kind of glad that they
cool
didn't.
Cool reveal. Like,
it would have been cool, but it also I could see it doesn't really fit.
I don't know about that.
It would have been, again, what is great about the Matrix is that there's no fat. And I feel that would have been some fat, and that would have been needing some explanation as to why. Because, I mean, you're just going to have a dude, and then you... Because Switch, you don't... I mean, you see Apoc, you see Switch, you see Mouse, you see them in the Matrix, and they are their stylized version of themselves.
They look the same, except just with longer hair and, like, better clothes.
Yeah, so if you had shown that in the Matrix, that would have been like, you know, you would have had to take a scene, I feel, and be like, wait, what, you're... Why are you it would have been jarring and taken you out, I feel. And I get why they did it. I think it's a cool thing. It's a cool trivia fact now. I'm glad it's not there.
I disagree. Because, one, I think it's much like the Animatrix, where it's like, that's a neat idea. I don't think you would have to, like, fully mine it or give a whole scene. But, like, you're arguing about the fat, and, like, I don't think it would be fat. Because, like, we have a whole scene talking about the lady in red and why Mouse designed it. Like, that's a small scene. Like, we don't technically need, like, there's a way I think that could have been written in where it would have been.
Yeah.
It would have been
maybe
fine.
Again, you know, and if anybody could have done it, it would have been early 90s Larry and Andy Wachowski.
I think it would have been a cool little reveal. You read Ready Player One?
Oh, yeah.
Well, like, his friend, who's a guy the entire time, and, like, it comes out to the very end, it's like a heavyweight or heavyset black woman. Like, what a cool reveal. And, like, also at the same time, like, the kid's hurt and betrayed by it, and, like, it kind of makes sense. And it's just, it shows, like, it's, I don't know, a lot of maturity and just a willingness to do something different and bold. I just thought it would have bolstered the movie.
I think they probably thought about it too, and they decided that for storytelling wise. And I don't think Larry and Andy in this era could have done wrong, and I agree. They rightfully decided, like, this is just gonna add nothing to the story itself. Yeah. The story is of Neo. Like, we don't need to add in all this weird fluff.
I'm ultimately not her. I'm like, oh damn, now it's the less perfect movie. I think it would have been interesting, and I think they could have done it.
I
could also see the world where you're saying it's like, well, it could also be done really poorly, and then, like, they hammer on it.
Yeah, and then it takes you out of the movie and ruins the pacing.
It could be just as bad. Yeah.
Man, God, I had so much fun. So I said I'd get back to it. This movie absolutely passed the Mandy test. Mandy had never seen this movie before we watched it.
That's insane.
Yeah. Well, you know, she is a girl. She wasn't a nerdy girl really before she got with me. So. Understandable.
I just felt like it was more mainstream than just nerds. I felt like it was like an event movie. Like,
it did go mainstream. Dude, I saw this movie 3 times in theaters. I think I've said that before too.
I didn't see it in theaters. God, I missed it on VHS. Like, our aunt and uncle were like, have you seen this movie called The Matrix? I was like, you're talking about Giant Mnemonic. We saw it. It isn't good. It's The Matrix.
No, it's really good. So, we've seen some movies together, but I have weird quirks I do when I see movies. One thing I do is if I'm really into a scene, or especially I like it when something cool happens, or I have this weird thing where, like, something awesome violently happens, I laugh.
Oh, I do too.
I'm like,
oh yeah.
I get so wrapped up in that. And another thing I do is that when something is really exciting, and I guarantee you will see this happen when we see Star Wars, I do this thing, and that sound is me rubbing my hands together. I can't help it. It's a weird twitch I have.
Tense up. I don't breathe, and I tense when I like. So, like, watching the Avengers for the first time, like, I don't think I breathed for 2 hours. I was just.
So, what I'm saying, you know, I have these things where I laugh, and what I loved is that I'm sitting here watching this movie with Mandy, and there are two definite scenes where she laughed because she was so into it and just so, like, on board with what is happening.
Yeah.
And I was like. And when it was over, she actually turned. She's like, "That was really awesome. I liked that movie a lot." I'm like, "Yeah, that movie's fucking great."
Awesome.
And so, but I was just so warmed and like when and she started laughing before me. It wasn't her playing off of me because I knew what was happening. So I'm not gonna instantly do it. I've seen this movie tons of times. So it was a nice thing to see that she is getting it on this level that I'm getting it on. I love that, and I'm like, that is a good movie. Because this should not appeal to my girlfriend, really, as a movie. I mean, it's a weird, expositional, sci-fi fuck-up of a mind movie. But, man, she was into this from the beginning to the end. So, it's a great movie. It's great storytelling.
I agree.
Yeah.
Question. Are you going to show her the sequels?
I think I will. I had told her I wouldn't, because she watched the Animatrix with me too. The Animatrix did not pass the Mandy test.
Okay.
But
I get that.
I think we will watch the sequels. I kind of don't want to, because I don't want to. But again, I want to reevaluate them too.
I don't think she's gonna like them. No. Just because I don't think even the fans really like them.
Yeah. And I'm one of the biggest Matrix fans I know. I am a huge Matrix fan, so I guess I don't really have anything else to say unless you do.
I have one.
Okay.
One more comment, because this is something I maybe overlooked the first million times I've seen The Matrix, but Tank, played by Marcus Chung, I really love him in this movie.
And I agree, and it's sad. And
such a good actor. Like, he did so good.
Here's the thing. I can give you even more background, because
I know what you're going to say, and this is disappointing in the sequel.
He gets replaced
Harold Perrineau.
Because Tank, the guy, whoever you just said, he pulls a very, who was War Machine in the first Iron Man?
Terrence Howard.
Mm-hmm. He got a big head. And
that's a shame.
He actually showed up to the studio in the parking lot with a gun and was ranting, dude, this guy came unhinged.
Oh, I didn't know it went that far.
Yeah, it was bad. And so he had to be replaced. And I agree with you. It suffers. He's so good in this one.
Like, when he cries about Neo, or
his brother Dozer.
Well, yeah, his brother Dozer, but like somebody in the Matrix gets, I think it's Neo, he gets shot. He's like, no, Neo.
Nobody dies.
He sees something in the Matrix, and he just reacts to a blank computer screen. And he does it with such intensity.
Thing that I think you're getting at is when he comes back, like, because Cypher, after he...
Yes.
Turns, he thinks he's killed him, and then
he gets him with that
electricity gun, and he comes back on, and after they saved Morpheus, Morpheus calls,
it's Morpheus.
He picks up and he goes, "God damn, it's good to hear your voice, sir." And there's God, it's so good, man. And I agree with you. I love every second Tank is on the screen, and it's so sad.
Yeah. I think he might be the best actor in this movie.
Probably.
There's just a range of emotions that you don't get from other people. Like, Morpheus is just very stoic, and Neo is kind of confused, and Trinity's quiet, and he is just, man, he is on point. Like, he blew me away this time watching, and he's not blown me away in the past. It's always Joey Pants. Joey Pantoliano is Cypher. Like, I always loved him.
Yeah.
Because, like, who doesn't villain, bad guy?
He's good.
And he has good points. But Tank blew me away this time. Yeah. I love
him.
And
I think that maybe lends itself to him as an actor, because he is a supporting character. He's not supposed to jump out at you. And
no, he did.
Yeah. He did now, looking back, you know, looking for things. But
yeah,
Tank's always been one of my favorite parts. So it's sad that he's not there anymore.
Yeah. The next actor I remember being... fine. Like, he's not bad, great either.
There could have been a lot of good things they did with Tank in the sequels that I don't think.
Because they get into his family, and, like, I could have seen Marcus Chung just doing an amazing job making you care.
So I agree, man. But that's... You know, actors are fucking crazy, man.
Apparently, a gun in the parking lot.
Yep. Of the studio.
Mind blown.
Yep.
So, final thoughts on The Matrix, then.
One of the best movies of all time. Best movies of the 90s.
I think it's easily one of the best movies in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the best sci-fi movies ever. This movie changed films for the next decade after it was released.
Yeah.
Tell me a movie 5 years after this that was a big budget that didn't try to do something that The Matrix had. It redefined that slow-moving action shot thing.
It's much like Pulp Fiction, where, like, it came out and then so many movies tried to ape it, ride that train. Yep.
It is culturally defining. It is a keystone of filmmaking. I think it will be remembered for a long time, which is, again, something that the sequels can't have. I think, I don't know if I could go as far as to say it, but, you know, it's maybe my generation Star Wars.
Ooh. I think a lot of people wanted that. And
it's sad that the sequels don't come to the same level that it does, because it could have been. It definitely was hitting that cultural sci-fi big... Because Star Wars came out of nowhere, too. The Matrix came out of nowhere.
I actually think some people would say Lord of the Rings is this generation Star Wars, or even Pirates of the Caribbean, which
I don't consider that... Lord of the Rings, I consider our generation.
Because that's right around Matrix. That was 2000.
But not
Pirates.
Pirates is younger than us. I would give you
those millennials.
Lord of the Rings, I could see that too. That could be something I'd like to do, a retrospect on those. I have all the extended versions.
Me
have you
too.
Seen?
Yeah. Yeah. On DVD, though, I don't have the Blu-rays.
I just have them on DVD, too. But again, dude, I'm telling you, use that upscaler.
I'm
on the
gonna
PC.
Now.
That,
yeah.
That has the best Blu-ray upscaler you can get. It's a Sony goddamn Blu-ray player. It upscales fantastically. So, final thoughts, conclusions, man. God, The Matrix is good.
It's great. It's a perfect choice for your top five. It's I knew this going in. I knew watching it again, I was not going to find anything contentious. Like, smart choice on your part. Absolutely belongs on your top five.
And again, you know,
I can't fight with it.
For a long time, and we will get into why my number one is my number one. But, you know, going back, I haven't watched it for a while. This might make a positional change to it. Might move back up to number one. I love this movie, man. I did a lot with this movie. It influenced me a lot in everything. It got me into anime. I wasn't really... I was kind of always into it, but this really... This movie turned me into a big fan. Because it is...
Okay.
It's a big love letter to anime, too.
I was already into Dragon Ball Z and all that stuff before.
See, I like Dragon Ball Z, and I guess I did. But, you know, I liked Akira a lot
Akira
I was younger.
Yeah.
And I saw Akira, but I...
I saw it and loved it as a kid. I didn't quite understand it. And going back,
exactly.
And so I was like, how the hell did I watch this movie when I was 13?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah, so great. I'm glad you're on board with this one.
It's
so.
You know, it's a 2.5-hour movie, and it doesn't feel like
I did not know that. It does not feel
like
that at all.
I think, on Netflix, like, it was, 2 hours and 23 minutes. Like,
I had no idea.
It's long, but it doesn't feel like it.
No, not at all. It's paced perfectly. It flows. Again, I think a lot of that is the fact that there's no fat. Everything is shown to you for a purpose. Everything drives. It continues on, so.
I agree.
All right.
I agree completely.
Well, that will be our episode on The Matrix and the Animatrix. It was a good discussion, man. I like this one this week.
Yeah, I did too.
I like that we've changed this format, and we are just focusing on the one movie.
I think it's better that way.
There's no way we could have jammed two movies into this, man. Because
without doing service to The Matrix.
I mean, we kind of did anyways, because I had the two, and then we will be doing it again next week because we have Kill Bill 1 and 2, which is cool. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that very hard.
Yeah,
next time we get
that's
together.
A movie I love, but that's a movie that might have some fat to be trimmed, but I love those fatty bits.
See, that's the difference. Like, Tarantino with fat, he's using that fat for flavor.
I think so.
So that's something we'll get into when we get into that. So
thank you again for listening. We are The Experience Grind. Please catch us at experiencegrindpodcast@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook at Experience Grind, or come to our website, experiencegrind.com. And guess what? We're on iTunes. We're on all your radio stations on the internet.
The
They're
Stitches.
Not radio stations.
Yeah.
Fuck. I fucked.
We're on the Stitcher, on the iTunes.
Just in with some vulgarity.
You can just... So I didn't know until we started this, like, a big... thing for me with doing this podcast is I wanted us on iTunes.
Yeah.
I didn't know so many people I know don't like iTunes.
Yeah, I use it for my podcast, if I didn't use an iPod.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of people listen to us just on the website. So we're available there, experiencegrind.com, every episode.
Yeah.
So.
And leave comments. Like, tell us what you think.
God, please.
You a
we
Matrix
want,
fan?
Yeah.
Like, do
we
you like the
you to,
Animatrix?
We want you to comment to us. We want to hear from you guys. Like, all four of you that listen to this show.
Please.
Come on, you know, it's crazy. The person that talks to us the most on the website is your wife.
That's right.
So somebody else too. Also, thank you, Laura. Continue that. You're amazing for all your outreach for us. But somebody else too. Give us some love. Come on.
Yeah.
We want
Give
to talk to you guys.
Suggestions. Like, do you want anything to talk about? Like, we'll talk about it. We're open.
So I guess that'll conclude my 2 weeks. Next week we will be discussing, I believe. Mass Effect 2, which is your game. So that'll be our next week. That's our teaser.
That'll be fun.
In conclusion, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
We'll catch
Hope you enjoyed
time.
It. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Ah!